FM and 1360 AM, along with Southern Season, present Side Dish with Jay White and Liz Cooper. Listen over the next 30 minutes as Jay White and Liz Cooper present the Chapel Hill Carrboro community with insights from the world of culinary, local and national farming, and so much more. Side Dish is brought to you by Southern Season, Chapel Hill's landmark gourmet emporium. Great for local gifts and delicious favorites. Visit them online at southernseason.com. And now, here's your host, Jay White and Liz Cooper, with Side Dish on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL.
Welcome to another edition of Side Dish. I'm Jay White. I'm here with my co-host, Liz Cooper, and we have Max Cast at the table with us. And the last time we had Max with us, he was getting ready to take a very important test.
I think, actually, what we want to say is he was going to sit for the Quartermaster Sommelier's Master Sommelier exam. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a test.
It's a test.
It is a test. Yeah, it's definitely a test of wills. It's a test of strength.
And a test of determination. So
exactly.
Yeah. And how did you do?
I passed the theory portion earlier this year. Unfortunately, I didn't pass the blind tasting and service this year. So I'm going back next year to take those two portions again. I have passed the blind tasting in the past, but since I reset, I have to do that again. So we'll see.
It's a long, arduous journey. I can say that I've sat it many times. And
that's how Liz and I know
close.
Each other.
That's how we know each other, is that that long, arduous journey. Of which I've given up and just gone right to the bubbles.
Speaking of bubbles, go ahead, Max.
Hopefully the fifth time's the charm.
Okay. Yes.
Well, and one of the things about this exam is at the end of it, regardless of how you do, there is a bubbles portion where you get to drink some rather fantastic bubbles. And, of course, that's the perfect segue to our
show today. We are at the end of the year. It's holiday time. So I thought, what better show could we do than be talking about bubbles and entertaining? So we have in front of us some beautiful bottles of champagne that we're going to be talking about, and unfortunately I have to do the tough part of tasting this along with these two experts. So I'm going to be the novice in the group and ask the simple questions while they give us the history and some more in-depth knowledge about champagne and bubbles in general. So
I'll
take it away, guys.
Important question. Shall I pour the champagne?
Please.
Yes,
please.
All right.
So we're going to start out, I think we should start out with the Ruinart.
Yeah.
So we have two wonderful champagnes. Max is pouring, and I wish that you could hear the lovely bubbling. I'll hold my glass up to the microphone so everybody can hear it. So we have Ruinart Blanc de Blanc, and we also have the Jacquesin 736, two very prestigious champagnes. And it's a great way to sort of segue into what makes champagne special and a little bit of history about it. So without further ado, I don't know if you can hear the bubbling. So, Max, why don't you give us, I'm going to put you on the hot seat here about a little bit of history.
All right.
So, Ruinart has quite the distinction, if you want to talk a little bit about it.
Definitely. So, Ruinart is located in the Reims. That's in the northern part of the Montagne de Reims, northern part of Champagne. They're the oldest producer of sparkling champagne. So Gosset is the oldest producer of wine and champagne, but Ruinart is the longest of sparkling. They are also, as of recently, the first producer of rosé champagne. They found evidence of that recently, which they didn't make a big deal of it, but that is the truth. And I think that Ruinart makes some of the most beautiful Blanc de Blanc champagnes that exist.
I would agree with you. Can you quickly explain what Blanc de Blanc is? Because Jay's giving me the look.
Yeah. So Blanc de Blanc is a style of champagne which is made only with Chardonnay or only with white grapes. Theoretically, you could use other rarer, geeky grapes, but you pretty much don't see that. So this is a Blanc de Blanc of champagne, of Chardonnay. Basically, you can also have a Blanc de Noir, which is a white wine of black grapes, technically speaking. So those are Pinot Noir,
so
Pinot Meunier.
The difference would be that you don't let the skins come in contact with the
In both cases, you don't let the skins come in contact. So, with the Pinot Noir and the Pinot Meunier, they press the juice so the juice comes out, but they don't have any skin
and that's
contact.
A great segue into a little bit of the history of champagne, because the actual history of doing that was to fortify their white wines to compete with Burgundy before they were actually producing these sparkling wines. And obviously, speaking of Ruinart being the first sparkling house, we probably want to talk a little bit about what makes champagne champagne.
Yes, of course.
As opposed to sparkling wine. So we're going to fit a lot of information into these segments.
Very quickly.
Yes.
All right. So what makes champagne champagne is that it comes from the region of Champagne, number one. Coming from the region of Champagne, it has, as of the 1935, when they brought in the appellation system, there are regulations for what grapes are allowed in Champagne and how the process is done. So with that being the case, there is what's called the method traditionnel, or what people used to call the method champenoise, which is bottle secondary fermentation mandatory in bottle. And then you have periods of mandatory lees aging and then also bottle aging, depending on what style of wine you want to make.
Yeah, and so not anybody can call it champagne. Obviously, it was the Treaty of Madrid and then verified with the Treaty of Versailles. Champagne throughout the European Union can only be called champagne if it's from Champagne. Otherwise, it's Cremant, or it's in Spain, it's Cava.
Or Franciacorta, or in Italy.
Prosecco.
Prosecco, yes. On the other hand, is made in a different method. So that's made in what's called the Charmat method, where the secondary fermentation is done in tank as opposed to bottle.
And what about the California Corbels and all these?
So
are they?
If they have called themselves champagne prior to 2006, unfortunately in the U.S., they still can. Most have moved to calling themselves sparkling wines. And those are also generally, the Corbels are generally done in big open tanks. But you have Schramsberg, and I'm trying to think.
Yeah, you have Schramsberg, you have Iron Horse. I think Iron Horse does amazing bubbly. You also up in, you have Argyle up in the Willamette Valley.
Sure.
Does a fantastic job.
Rotorua
Estate, Domaine Carneros, Domaine Chandon. There are a number of producers, obviously some of them with influence and backing from Champagne.
Sure.
But I'm a big fan of Schramsberg and Iron Horse.
Yes,
always
absolutely.
Have been.
So without further ado, let's all – I know we've all already taken sips. Sorry.
I haven't. No, I've been waiting for you guys. You're
cheated.
So rude. All
right. So cheers.
Cheers.
And
cheers.
Let's talk a little
Happy
bit
holidays.
About this.
Yeah, same to you.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
that's
from my
delicious.
Perspective, the bubbles are so tiny, and it's a continuous stream right from the bottom of the glass, which is what it's supposed to do, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's
and
the
And they're just
perlage.
Beautifully tiny. There's – very little effervescence on the tongue, though. It's just, it's very smooth.
That's an important thing, and I think Max can probably speak more to it, but I think a lot of this is what people forget. It's about the still wine first.
Yeah.
And then the actual making of the sparkling.
And it's about the quality of the still wine.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when a lot of people don't think when they drink sparkling wine, people don't put actually... that a lot of times people, they'll be like, oh, I want real wine, not sparkling wine. And... real wine is the base, and you have to have great real wine to have great sparkling wine.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back and do some more talking and drinking. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, brought to you by Southern Season.
You're listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, WCHL, presented by Southern Season in Chapel Hill, online at southernseason.com. And now, back with more Side Dish with Jay White and Liz Cooper.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper, and I'm here with my co-host Jay White and my colleague, Max Cast. And we were just having some lovely Ruinart. And Jay had some questions while we were talking about the quality.
We were talking about the quality of the still wine that makes or breaks the quality of the actual finished product. And my question is, can anything be made into a sparkling wine?
Definitely. Anything can be made into sparkling wine. The real question is, should it be? There's examples of sparkling Shiraz in Australia. There's great sparkling wines from Lambrusco and in Emilia-Romagna in Italy. I've had really nice sparkling wine from Sicily, from Mount Etna, the Murgo bubbly, which is absolutely delicious, and that's made from Norello Mascalese and Cappuccio. So that's really geeking out. But you can make great sparkling wine from unexpected grape varieties.
And it really goes back to it's the quality of the base
still wine.
Exactly.
that makes the quality sparkling.
Liz has just poured us our second bottle that's been opened, and this is a blend as opposed to the first one, which was 100% Chardonnay, correct?
Correct.
And what is, Max, what is the blend in this one?
So here it is still, Chardonnay is still a big part of it, but you have the two red grapes, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. So the Ruinart is all Chardonnay. And then this wine comes from two regions within Champagne. That's the Vallée de la Marne, where Jacson's located. And then also the Chardonnay comes from the Côte de Blanc, which is a little bit south of there. And the interesting thing about this wine is that it is predominantly one vintage as well. So this is predominantly 2008. And then I think it's with
34%
reserve wines going into that.
We should point out
reserve
for those
wines
that don't know reserve wine. So every year as they produce, and every champagne house does this essentially, every year that they produce, they hold wine back so that they can make a house style. So when you have that non-vintage brut, huge amounts of work and labor and tasting go into making that consistent from year after year rather than showcasing, let's say, a particular vintage, which Jacquesin, what we're tasting is the Jacquesin 736. And that focuses on essentially the 2008 vintage.
So when you're saying that there's a house recipe, so to speak,
yes,
and they want to continuously, year after year, use the same type of grapes. They don't look at the different vintage every year and say, this year we're going to mix this and this.
Well, they do, because each vintage is a little bit different. And so they take that vintage and
but
they
say... But percentage-wise, maybe,
right.
But not the actual three or four that their house wine is made from.
They'll change the percentages to make it.
But they won't bring in a different, whole different grape. Usually.
No,
not like.
And what's interesting about Jacson is that this is their house cuvée, as they speak. Mm-hmm. And generally, the house cuvée is meant to taste the same year after year after year. They may change their style coming around in the early 2000s, and they number this cuvée. So this is number 736, and they put that on there so you know that it's mainly from 2008. So their goal is to have their house cuvée different, dependent on the predominant vintage in there. So it's kind of a revolutionary thing. They are they were at the forefront.
Ones.
They're the only ones that did their house wine like that. And for that reason, I think one of the champagnes I recommend the most.
It's interesting.
It's very different than the first one. Again, the novice here is saying that the bubbles seem to be more predominant. They're and I can feel them on my tongue a little bit more than I could the first one. The first one was very gently effervescent. This is a little bit more assertive, but very, mm-hmm. very pleasant.
It's different, and I think I would agree with you focus-wise. The first wine, also because it's aged in large fooder, which are oak barrels, it adds a particular roundness. The amount of time that it's on its lees, which are the yeast cells, it goes through a process of autolysis, which mm-hmm. makes it rounder, creamier, richer. Whereas the Jacquesin tends to be a little more focused. The acidity is more, I think, more prevalent here.
I would, use the word bright, maybe.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, yeah, and with the Jacquesin, you get more of a nutty characteristic because it does have slightly more oxidative. The still wine is slightly more oxidative aging to it, where Ruinart's all about getting the freshness.
Okay, so again, I'm being the novice for everyone out there listening, and I have to learn too. So I'm looking at the table, and on the table we have different shaped corks, mm-hmm. and we have this little wire cage. So can you, either one of you, address what that is and why that is so important in champagne or sparkling?
Well, so I'm going to jump in here. Jacquesin is actually the creator and the inventor of that wire-shaped cage that you've noticed, which is called a mislet, which sometimes you see people crafting into furniture and all sorts of interesting things.
Which I'm not doing right now.
He is, actually. So that helps to hold the cork that you're seeing in place. The shapes of the corks, essentially, if you've seen a champagne cork and you can see it looks like a mushroom, mm-hmm. that's not how they start. They just start as a giant, like a regular cork, only much bigger around, as they're compressed into the bottle after the release of the sediment. I'm forgetting my words here. it takes that shape. So we probably should go ahead very quickly, and that's part of what makes champagne champagne, if you want to talk a little bit about that secondary fermentation.
Yeah. So what they do is you take the still wine, you put it into bottle, and then you put in what's called the liqueur de tirage, which basically is some basically yeast. And the yeast and sugar, and they put that in, and then they put a cap on it, like a soda top. And then they put them in upside down in either a riddling rack, which is the old traditional way of doing it, or in a gyropalette or a gyro palette, however you want to pronounce it, which is a larger machine that holds a number of bottles, I believe
504,
42 cases, right?
Yes, it's sad that I know that.
And what it does is that it mechanically does it, and that is moving the bottle ever so slightly, so you can bring the yeast down to the neck of the bottle and keep moving in the wine. Then once they're done with the amount of time that they want to age on the lees, you disgorge the wine. So you take that capsule off and you do it in a way to get rid of the yeast but not get rid of a lot of the wine. So you can either freeze the neck and it pops out like ice, or you can open it up in water and it pops up in the water and you go really quickly and bring it back up. Ice is the predominant way of doing it now because it's much more easy to do, and they're really cool looking machines where they put the bottles in there.
Is that little bit of wine that may be lost, is it replaced with anything?
It is, and it depends. So what the choice that the winemaker has here once they get to this stage is to add a bit of sweetness to it, and add what's called a dosage, which is it could be liqueur, it could be grape must, it could be a bunch of different things, which raise the level of residual sugar within the
wine. On that sweet note, we're going to have to go to break again. This is fascinating. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, brought to you by Southern Season.
You're listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, WCHL, presented by Southern Season in Chapel Hill, online at southernseason.com. And now, back with more Side Dish with Jay White and Liz Cooper.
Welcome back. You're listening to Side Dish, and I'm Jay White, and I'm here with Liz Cooper and Max Cass, and we're drinking champagne, and we're talking all about bubbles, and I'm going to ask, we have not mentioned the word Dom Perignon or the name Dom Perignon yet. And it seems that he always gets the credit for this wonderful libation.
Do you want to tell him about that mistake?
So we were just talking about this before, that Champagne was a still winemaking region, and Dom Perignon made still wines. So he's credited for bottling the stars, right? Mm-hmm. But in reality, what he had was a stuck fermentation in the wintertime. So he was making still wine. The fermentation in the bottle was stopped because of the cold weather. And then when spring came around, he noticed he had sparkling wine. So that is his miraculous discovery.
And he noticed it because the bottles were bursting.
Exactly. And that led to a whole long history of exploding bottles in the Champagne region. But the reality is that sparkling wine was invented before that time period, particularly in a region called Limoux in the southern part of France.
And actually, I would say the French are going to hate to hear this. If you're listening, cover your ears. The British are actually credited with truly enjoying sparkling wine for the sake of sparkling wine, because they were able to perfect the glass by taking it from wood-fired glass to coal-fired glass. So once again, while the French certainly perfect things and they make them a little bit more exciting and alluring, I think it's just the accent, actually. there are lots of people that have joined in the effort to make this incredible, incredible product that we're drinking.
No offense to our French friends.
It's wonderful.
And the French are full of inventions. We have the Widow Clicquot, who invented the actual riddling process, made perfected with the gyro palette by the Spanish. We have the mistlet from Jacquesson. What makes champagne so wonderful is that it's sort of considered the wine of royalty. But now it's for every day, and I think that's a great segue to talk about what do we drink this with.
Yeah,
right.
So this is something Max does.
This is holiday time, Max,
over at the Farrington House.
Yes,
he does.
So one of the big things, one of the main parts of my job, is doing wine pairings with our menu, and I try to incorporate champagne as much as possible into our chef's tasting menu, into our a la carte menu, because I find that people don't think of it as a food wine, and I think there is no that champagne is the ultimate food wine because it has the most versatility. So yeah, there's obvious things, oysters, caviar. But granted, if you're already spending the money on a really nice bottle of champagne, you're probably not having caviar and oysters. So I love it with cheese, and I'm a big proponent of having cheese before the rest of your meal. And I find that it goes really well with like triple creme cheeses, particularly something like this, the Ruinart, or one of my favorites is the Harbison cheese from Jasper Hill in Vermont and Ruinart. That is one of my favorite pairings on earth.
So there you have it. Liz, I need you to tell people, obviously the two that we're sampling today are available at Southern Season, and without mortgaging your second mortgaging your house,
actually how can we do this? Jumped in to make these recommendations, and I couldn't agree more. Certainly, at the base level for champagne, you're going to spend about $39, $40. Yeah. At the top, you could spend your house. But here, these are good mid-level. The Ruinart sells for around $74, and the Jacquesin around $65. Max, very quickly, your go-to sparkling if you want to stay below $30.
Cantati Castaldi from Franciacorta in Italy, the Gruet Blonde Noir from New Mexico.
Exactly. And from my end, I would say Grambeck Cap Classique from South Africa, which I think is wonderful. And again, the Castaldi selling for about $24, $25.
Yep.
The Gruet around 18, and the same thing with Grambeck.
Yep. Well, this has been a great show. For those who want to get out on their own and put together their own pairings, we have the champagne and the food at the Southern Season. For those who want to leave it up to the real experts, make a reservation at Farrington and let Max help you through a wonderful evening. So thank you for joining us, Max, and have a happy holiday.
Same to you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL, 1360 AM and 97.9 FM, brought to you by Southern Season.